Yesterday was Valentine's Day, and I don't know about you, but Valentine's Day is a time for lovers, and you know we've expanded it for you know kids wishing their parents, their moms, dads happy Valentine's Day, and all that. But it's a day really where we celebrate love, and I want to tell you that it's you know if you're a good guy. You find a way to make it really special for your girl, and similarly, the girls do that for the guys. Now, you know, guys, I'd make a suggestion to you that you know if you ask your wife or your girlfriend, they'll normally say, "Oh no, you don't have to get me anything. I'm good." Don't believe it. Don't believe it at all. I'll say that you know, get flowers or get a card, and I also tell you that if you get flowers, get it for work or school or wherever they are, because the more people that see it is the more bragging rights that you get and the more points that you get. And for us guys, we know points go a long way. The thing about love is that love is fun. And especially when you first fall in love, it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun. And just like I said in the video, you do all these things and anything just to keep it fun and exciting. But then after a while, you discover that, you know, as time goes on, it gets hard. And this the journey of, you know, moving from that new love to that maintenance mode gets hard. And it requires lots and lots of work. It requires you to give up some things that you would want. It requires you, if you're a guy, to give it up getting dressed yourself. Because once you get married, you all of a sudden figure out you don't know how to get dressed anymore because they tell you what to wear and what looks good and what doesn't. It requires you giving up some of your friends. You can't hang out so much late at night anymore. It requires you to give up stuff. But the stuff that you give up, or what you get back in return, supersedes that by a long shot. By a long shot. The reward is good, and you really feel good about giving it up. Before we go any further, let's just pray. Heavenly Father, Lord, and this day, day after Valentine's Day, this day, the end of this series that we've been doing since the beginning of this year, Lord, I pray especially that you'll move through me in a mighty way, that I will just share whatever you have laid on my heart in the way that you want me to share it. Lord, I pray that you'll open up minds, hearts, to be receptive, to be responsive, and to not only be hearers, but to be doers also. In Jesus' name, we pray. Amen. Amen. I want to tell you today that today, this is different than any of the messages that I've spoken about in this whole series. It's not a fan series. It's the last one, and the question that begs to be asked today is Jesus enough? And it's unusual in that the whole time that we spend together is probably going to come off like an invitation. And unabashedly, I'm going to tell you that it is. It is an invitation. It's an invitation to say that I want to leave where I am today and to commit to being a completely committed follower of Christ. Now, there are undoubtedly different people in their faith journey. Some have not decided yet whether they want to get in the game, you know, kind of want to, you know, they're kind of checking this Jesus thing out. And then some get in and they're like, I'm good, I'm in heaven, I made it, right? And some are like, I'm trying to follow. And some is like, man, I'm like fired up. I don't care where you are on the journey. At the end of today, I want you to say, if I'm over here, I want to come over here. If I'm here, I want to come over here. If I'm here, I want to come over here. If you're here, you say, I'm going to freshly commit to being right there where Jesus wants me to be, which is to be a completely committed follower of Christ. So I'm giving you fair warning. That's going to be my invitation as we go through this. If you're alive today, and I think most of you are, maybe by the end of the sermon you maybe won't be, but if you're alive today, you realize that you're on a journey. You're on a journey that takes you from this life into the afterlife. If you're on a Christian, if you're a Christian, you on that journey, you are still going on the journey from this life into the afterlife. And whatever you do today has impacts on whatever happens tomorrow. It's like an investment. You invest today for a return tomorrow. For the past 6 weeks, we've been talking through what it means to be a follower of Jesus. What it means to be a follower of Jesus. We said that Jesus had lots of people following him, but they weren't really followers. They were fans. And like a fan, like a sports fan. And we said that we define a fan as an enthusiastic admirer, somebody who admired Jesus, who liked to hang out with him. We said that you saw from in the Bible, and it's no different today, is that people hung out with Jesus for three reasons. One, they liked the show. It was the best show in town. It was a show where you could go, you could see miraculous things happen. You could see a man reach out his arms and his arm wasn't working and it would just stretch out and become together. You'd see somebody who was in a wheelchair all their life and they would stand up and they could walk. You'd see all kind of stuff. You'd see that it was the greatest show on earth. Ringling Brothers and Barnum and Bailey Circus had nothing on the show that Jesus had. So people hung out for the show. People also hung out for another reason. They hung out for the food. They hung out for what they could get because Jesus oftentimes fed the people. But not only that, they could come to him with their problems and Jesus would solve their problems for them. If the Pharisees, somebody was after you, you came to Jesus, Jesus oftentimes would rebuke the Pharisees and you would be saved. And so it was people hung out with him for what they could get, the food and what else they could get. But there was a third reason that people hung out with Jesus. It was for the popularity. He was undoubtedly the most popular man in town at that time. And so, look, you want to hang out with popular people, or some people do. And so hanging out with Jesus was a cool thing to do. If you were a follower of Jesus, you were in with the in crowd. But Jesus oftentimes made people come to a point of decision where he says, okay, you guys been following me? We have a defined relationship moment. What do we have here? And when he said that, oftentimes he challenged people. And those times you'd see people like, oh man, this is no longer fun. And you'd see them turn away and walk away. But then, you know, then the show was a falling day and they'd show up again and it would start all over again. I feel Jesus challenging us today to say, hey, what do you guys want to be? What do you guys want to be? See, Jesus understood a lot about consumer mentality. He created it, as a matter of fact. He created consumers. He created people with needs and desires. When you have a need and desire, you know, you want that need and desire met. But Jesus is saying, I want to take you from a consumer. I want to take you from a fan into a follower. So the question is, people of PCC today, do you want to be a consumer? Do you want to be a fan? Or do you want to freshly commit to being a completely committed follower of Christ? The thing about Jesus is that Jesus offers salvation freely. Salvation is free. You don't have to do anything. Anybody tells you that you got to do something for your salvation, they're lying to you. Because there's not enough works. So nobody can boast about it. It's a free gift. But salvation is free. But following Jesus is not. If following Jesus is going to cost you something. It's going to cost you something. It may cost you some friends. It may cost you your job. It may cost you your reputation. It may cost you some embarrassment. It may cost you money. It may cost you whatever. But the point that I want to make to you this morning is that that cost is worth it. Now, in terms of illustration, let me give you an illustration. Let's say I said to you, hey, you give me $1,000, and I'm going to give you $100 million in return. And I'm going to give you $100 million in return, and you have a choice. You have a choice. Am I going to believe that Gary is going to give me $100,000 in return? Let's say that you've seen me turn money into more money before in the past. what would you do? What would you do? Would you say, I don't have the money, I can't find $1,000? Or would you say, hey, I'm going to give it to him? And what if I say that, I can't tell you when you're going to get the $100 million, but I'm going to give it to you? Would you give me that $1,000? Would you give up that $1,000 of today's spending money for the $100 million tomorrow? You see, I'm convinced that people don't become true followers of Christ because they don't really believe that they're going to get back in return for what they give out today. Just like how most of you, if I told you that, probably none of you would believe me. And you'd have very good reason, because I can't get you $100 million, but I can take you $1,000. So if you want to give me $1,000, I'll be more than happy to take it, make checks payable to Gary Wallace. Oh, Gary and Donna Wallace, I'm sorry. Gary. You know, for most of the series, we've been taking a look at Jesus and Jesus feeding the 5,000 men. And 5,000 men, he made a distinction in Luke, about 5,000 men, which is about 12,000 people, maybe 12,000 to 15,000 people. But there's another story that's very similar that sometimes people think is the same story, but it's completely different, right? Jesus, another time, he was feeding 4,000 people, not men, but people, right? And so these people were hanging out with Jesus for 3 days. They were hanging out with him so long and enjoying the show that they ran out of food, because they all carried their food and they ran out of food. It's found in Mark chapter 8. And so they ran out of food, and on the third day, they're hungry. And Jesus got together with the disciples. He's like, hey, this show is over, and we need to send these folks home. But they've been hungry for so long that when they go, if they try to go on their way, some of them are going to faint because they're hungry. And so he said to the disciples, hey, you guys got any food? And I can imagine the disciples like, man, I got these 7 loaves of bread. Those are from me. But he says, no, get it. And he brought the 7 loaves of bread and he distributed it to all the people. And so he distributed the bread and then he's like, he didn't say this there, but I'm just kind of inserting this here. It says, man shall not live by bread alone. And so he said, don't you guys have anything else? And they said, well, yeah, we have a few small fish. And he said, give it to me. And he took the fish and he broke it and he spread it out. And man, everybody was full. Everybody felt good. He's like, okay, I'm gone. He jumped with his disciples and he got in a boat and they were going to the city called Caesarea and Philippi with a brief stop in Bethsaida to heal somebody. And, they left the crowd, but on the way there, more people started to follow him. And these crowds just started to follow him again. And, anywhere Jesus was, crowds inadvertently wanted to follow him. They wanted to come by because, hey, there was going to be another show and some more food, dinner and the movies. And so when Jesus had finished, getting to Caesarea Philippi, there was another crowd there and the crowd was following. And then Jesus makes this DTR statement, the statement that many guys hate, which is, it stands for define the relationship, is what do we have here? Where's this relationship going? And Jesus, here's a story where Jesus asked them that question. Let's see here. It says, then he called the crowd to him along with his disciples and said, whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. He said they must deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. And what was interesting was this was not the first time he had said that. He said this before in Luke and when he fed the other folks. So this was the second time he said this to a different group of people, the same words. So this is a different crowd of people. And this crowd of people is like, well, what are you talking about, Jesus? And what are you talking about? Deny myself? I am not here to deny myself. I came here because I'm crippled. I want healing. It's for me. I want to be able to walk. I came here with one arm. I want two. I'm not about denying myself. Hey, you're telling me to deny myself. I don't want to deny myself. I'm hungry. I want to be fed. I'm being oppressed by the religious leaders. I want freedom. I don't want to deny myself. What are you talking about? Go on, Jesus. Why you got to be a downer like that? Why you got to be like that? And then he says to take up their cross. And the cross, as we heard a couple weeks ago, was a symbol of torture. Jesus hadn't died yet. They didn't know about cross being resurrection and all this other stuff that we know today. It's like, take up my cross? The only people who took up crosses were criminals. Why would I want to do this? And Jesus is like, hey, if you want to follow me, this is what you got to do. You got to deny yourself. You got to take up your cross. And people are like, hey, man, I'm not feeling that. And so the crowds kind of like didn't want to stay, and they wanted to leave. And then he goes on to say this. He said, for whoever wants to save their life will lose it. And whoever loses their life for me and for the gospel will save it. People are like, man, Jesus, come on, man. But when I break that down, that verse down, how you break that verse down is Jesus saying here that all of us wants to save our lives. The first part. Unless you have something wrong with your head, something wrong mentally, you have a desire. We are born with a desire to live. Whoever wants to live, which is all of us, will lose it. Means all of us are going to die. Whoever wants to live is going to die. All of us want to live, and all of us are going to die. The moment we come on this earth, terminal. We come on this earth, and we are going to die. So if you want to save your life, I'm going to die. It's like, and he says, for whoever loses their life for me and for the gospel, which gospel stands for the good news of Jesus, will save it. He's saying that, look, you're going to die anyway. Right? But if you die and you lived your life according to, for me, if you lived the life for me and for the gospel, you will save your life. And that kind of like bug people, because they're like, man, what is it? Man, you know, I work for an insurance company, my other job. Last year, we paid out $24 billion in healthcare claims for people who want to save their life. $24 billion in claims for people who want to save their life. He says, you can't save your life. You're going to die. That's all of us going to die. Right? But he's like, look, if you live your life for me, I'll give you life. I'll give you life, and I'll give you abundant life, not only on this side, but with the greatest insurance plan ever. A good friend of mine is in here, and he's an insurance agent. I tell you, this insurance plan is better than that plan. Better than that plan. You know, and then he goes on to say, well, what good is it for someone to gain the whole world, yet forfeit their soul? Or what can anyone give in exchange for their soul? A few weeks ago, we shut down this building one Sunday a year, and we meet in a park on a Sunday. And we have church in the park, we call it PCC in the park, we have a picnic and stuff. But I shared something. I said that each one of us is made up of three parts. We're made up of body, soul, and spirit. And our body, those three parts are really two parts. It's material and immaterial, right? So the immaterial part is the soul and the spirit. And the body is a material part. It's a physical and a non-physical part. The physical part interacts with the environment through your five senses, and your physical part is going to die. That's it. It's going to die. Your soul is your mind, your will, your emotions, and that's, it's very real, because if you ever come across an emotional person, you realize that it's real, but you can't touch it, but you can certainly feel it. You can feel their emotions. And so that part lives forever. And your spirit is what God communicates through. God's spirit speaks to your spirit. So we're made up of body, soul, and spirit. Your soul and spirit lives forever. So Jesus is saying here, he says, what if you had the perfect life? You had the money of Bill Gates. Right? I think all of us, when somebody says, hey, I give you the money of Bill Gates, we'd say, oh, that's cool. I'd love that. If you had the money of Bill Gates, and guys, you had the perfect wife. You can't have my wife, so let me make up some other wife for you. All right? So you had picked the perfect wife, right? pick, you know, take your wife and put in all the things that, you know, you'll never admit to her that you don't really like, and just make it perfect. And you had money, you had the woman, you had everything that you wanted to have, right? You had the perfect kids. They never talked back to you, ever. They applied for college on time. They filled out their scholarship stuff. Anybody hear me this morning? They always did their homework and turned it in. Because your parents know that there are two different things. Doing the homework is one challenge. Turning it in is an entirely different challenge, which blows my mind, because if I was going to do one of the two, I'd get the homework from somebody else and turn it in, as opposed to do the homework and not turn it in. I'm not encouraging that, by the way. Don't anybody come and email me afterwards. But you had the perfect, you had money, you had a perfect girl, you had the perfect kids, you had this perfect life. And I truly believe this, that if we really, truly, truly believed in the afterlife, if we said that, hey, if we spend, that we're going to spend, say, 80 years on this earth, but we're going to spend like 800 billion years plus in eternity, and somebody said to you, hey, would you trade in those 80 years of the good life, what Kanye West talks about, for a good life in the next life? 80 years of to 800 billion years of really, really, really good. Most people would probably say, yeah, I'd make that sacrifice. The fact of the matter is that most people don't. Because if you just look, it's a simple principle of investing and saving. If you ask how many people here save today for a rainy day tomorrow, most people consume more today and worry about tomorrow. But the reality is that if we... And social scientists tell you that we don't think rationally about these things when it comes on to ourselves. We think about it for other people. But if we thought about things rationally, investment today, savings today, is worth more tomorrow. You invest, if I say I give you a dollar today and you save it, you'll get $1.10 tomorrow and $1.22 the following day and $1.38 the following day. It would make sense because you have more purchasing power. But most people say, I'll spend a dollar today because tomorrow isn't promised to me. I may die or something. But the reality is that if we truly believed in the afterlife, would we trade in the perfect life today for the perfect life tomorrow? And that's what he's saying there. What good is it for the man to gain the whole world yet forfeit the soul? Or what can anyone give in exchange for the soul? And then Jesus goes on and he says this, if anyone is ashamed of me and my words, the Son of Man would be ashamed of them when he comes in his Father's glory with his holy angels. I want to tell you that whatever you're worried about and whatever you're stressing about today, whether it's money, whether it's love, whether it's relationships, whether it's your time, whether it's the car that you want to get, it's going to be gone anyway. It's going to be gone anyway. And you're going to leave it to somebody else. When you get to the other side, the only thing that really matters is what you did for the sake of Christ. When you get to the other side and you look back, everything that you gave up, everything that you had that you didn't give up, will be a distant memory. And all that matters is what is it for the sake of Christ. You know, there's a guy. I call him a guy because I'm just kind of an informal kind of person. But his name was Paul. He wrote most of the New Testament. He's a pretty important guy. He said he had money. He had political power. He had everything that anybody could ever want. And he said this, man, I consider that all garbage. Actually, the language he used was much stronger. He says, all this stuff ain't worth dung. Yeah, I think he used a little bit stronger word than that. Compared to the sake of knowing Christ. And so everything that he gave up, he's like, man, nothing compares to that, you know, and receiving the rewards in eternity. You see, I am totally convinced of this thing. I'm totally convinced that we don't know the way we wish, so we don't believe the way we should. We don't know the way we wish, so we don't believe the way we should. If I break this down for you, I you could say, man, if I knew for sure, that if whatever I did today was going to have an impact on tomorrow, if I gave this up today, I will get this tomorrow. I would do it. Says, God, could you just show me a sign and wonders? If I go down, God, would you just talk to me audibly and tell me, would you send an angel down to me and come down and tell me this? Then I would know that tomorrow, so I can give up what I have today for tomorrow. And most people's like, yeah, if I could know for sure, I would. But the fact is, God did that. He actually did that. He did that to the crowds. He told the crowds there, you know, he's like, hey, he's doing all these wonders and signs, and he's like, man, you know, I can heal people. And he's like, look, and he would say stuff like, hey, I'm going to die, and in 3 days, on the third day, I'm going to be raised again. And everybody's like, yeah, go Jesus. And then you guys can believe, put your faith in me, that I am the Messiah. Then I am the Messiah. He told them everything, but yet, what happened when he got arrested? When he got arrested, people were like, yo. Like, and then they saw him die. And they're like, snap. I know he said all of this, but yeah, Peter, like, man, then. When he got questioned, he's like, man, I don't know the man. Peter cursed. We're like, Peter, you were with that guy. He's like, he cussed a bad word. He's like, I don't know the guy. Everybody like hid because they didn't know the way they wished they knew. So they didn't believe the way they should have believed. And we're no different. We're no different. I am no different. Because there are sacrifices, there are things that I could do that I don't do. Because of that, we don't know the way we wish, so we don't believe the way we should. You know, Jesus spent 3.5 years investing in the lives of these disciples. You know, he showed them signs and wonders. He showed them his resurrection. And what happens next is pretty astounding. You know, the disciples get scared and they go into hiding. For 3 days, they kind of go into hiding. And then Jesus appears, right? He resurrects and appears to them, you know. And they're like, oh, man, Jesus is like, wow, he really did what he said he was going to do. Another sign and wonder. You know, and he proves that he's risen. And all of a sudden, they're not scared anymore. And they're like out of hiding, but guess what? They sure as heck are not going to talk about Jesus. Because it's cool, you know, Jesus is God, right? So he can raise himself from the dead, but I'm not God. When they come kill me, I can't raise myself from the dead. I don't want to be nailed to the cross. And they're like in hiding. And, you know, not in hiding, but they're out, but they're not talking. They're not fulfilling the Great Commission, which really hadn't been given yet, but they were supposed to. You know, go out and spread the word. And so, you know, the funny thing that really happens next is again one of the things that really comes home to me as really just the way we are. So check this out. So, you know, Jesus appears to them and everything's all good, but they're like still scared of talking about Jesus. They're scared of telling people about Jesus, of being a truly devoted, committed follower of Jesus. And so they're sitting around in a room, and what do? Peter's like, man, I'm going fishing. John 21. He says, I'm going fishing. Peter went back to his old career. He went back to his old career. He says, I'm going fishing. And he's like, anybody with me? And I'm like, people headed out back fishing. Instead of fishing for men, they went back fishing for fish. You know, and Jesus wants you. He wanted them. He wants you. He wants me to put him ahead of anything else. He wants you to put nothing else. I'll put it in a negative way. He wants you to put nothing else ahead of following him. Nothing else. Your money, your career, your girl, your nothing ahead. He's not saying give that up. He's saying that it's about priorities. It's about you and me as being the primary relationship from through which everything flows. Because when you put him first, everything else just gets added onto you. You think you have money now? I'm saying that you put your trust and faith in Jesus. You put your trust and faith in his words. I guarantee that, and I told folks this before, that it will come down, pressed down, shaken together, running over. You cast your bread upon the water, it's going to come back on every wave. So these guys go fishing. These guys go fishing. And they're out there and they're catching nothing. And so they're coming back in shore. They were toiling all night. And then all of a sudden, you know, they're like, man, it's a bummy night. And they hear a voice from the shore. And the voice from the shore, this is found in John 21. You guys can read it for yourself. I'm just giving it to you in the Gary Wallace English version. But it's all there in whatever version that you want to read. Somebody says, I don't think he said it in Spanish, but I say in Spanish, mi amigos, have you caught any? What have you caught? And people do that. If you see people coming in from fishing, the first thing, it's like we're trained. You know, it's almost like when you're standing on a bridge. What's the first thing you do when you stand on a bridge and look down? You guys don't do that. I know what I do. I spit. For some reason. And I watch it, and I guess I count how many seconds it takes to get to the ground. You never trained for that, but you kind of trained for that. When you see a fisherman coming in, the first thing you ask is, did you catch anything? What did you catch? And that's what the voice on the shore said. And they said, we caught nothing. And the voice says, hey, cast your net on the other side of the boat. And so they cast their net on the other side of the boat, which I can imagine what the conversation went on the boat. It's like, man, that don't make any sense. The boat is only this wide. We catch nothing here. Cast on the other side. Probably not going to catch anything, but they cast it. And they caught so much fish. The Bible said they caught 153 fish. 153 fish. They caught so much fish that they had problems, you know, bringing those fish in. And somebody says, I think it was John, says, I think that's Jesus. And Peter looks, and Peter's just like, it's weird. He put on his coat, and then he dove into the water. His coat was off, and he swam. It was only about 100 yards from shore, and he swam into shore, and he saw Jesus. Jesus already had a fire going, and he had fish on the fire, and he said to them, bring the rest of the fish. We want to cook some more fish. And Jesus had breakfast for them, and they're chilling out with Jesus for the food. It's back to the old ways. Yes, this is the way things are supposed to be, nice and comfortable. Nice and comfy. So, yeah, chilling out with my best buddy, hanging out, eating some food. And then they're finished and they're reclining, rubbing their belly. Last night I went to a party and I ate so much. I can imagine that they did the same thing. And then Jesus did it again. He busted out with another DTR moment. As a matter of fact, this is the last DTR moment recorded by John. He looked at Peter, and he called him Simon. He said, Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these? Do you love me more than these? And he responded, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. Feed my lambs. But he says, do you love me more than these? And the these, he was like pointing to what did Peter love the most? Fish. Fishing. And everything that fishing provided. And fishing provided him with a hobby, recreation. Fishing provided him with income, with career. Fishing provided him with some good fisherman buddies, some friends, some relationship. He's like, Peter, do you love me more than these? Do you love me more than your career, Peter? Do you love me more than your money, Peter? Do you love me more than your friends, Peter? Do you love me more than, and for you, do you love me more than your girlfriend or your boyfriend or your husband or wife? Do you love me more than these? He's like, yes, Lord, you know I love you. And then he does this. He's like, he asks him a second time. He's like, Simon, a son of John, do you love me? And he answered, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. And he said, take care of my sheep. And then, you know, Peter's like, oh, man, that's uncomfortable. It's done. And then Jesus bumped out one more time. And the third time he says, it's Simon, Peter, son of John, do you love me? Do you love me? Peter was hurt because Jesus asked him this the third time. Do you love me? Peter says, God, you know all things. You know that I love you. And Jesus said, feed my lambs. He's asking him, Peter, do you love me more than a comfortable life? Do you love me more than sleep, Peter? What do you love me more than? Do you love me? Am I enough for you, Peter? Am I enough for you? And I believe, I'm going to ask the praise team to come on out. The musicians will be playing. But I believe that same question that Jesus asked Peter this morning is the same question he's asking me. And he's asking you. He's saying, Gary, am I enough for you? Or do you need these more than me? Do you love me more than these? He's saying, Donut, do you love me more than these? He's saying, Gary Asquith, do you love me more than these? He's saying, Dwayne, do you love me more than these? He's saying, Patrice, do you love me more than these? Put your name in here and answer that question in your mind this morning. Do you love me more than these? Am I enough for you? Am I enough for you, Gary? Am I enough for you, Gary? And you know, as I sat down preparing this message, I kept thinking about this. And on one hand, I can look in the mirror and say, yeah, I'm doing things for Jesus. Yeah, there's sacrifice I'm making for Jesus. I'm a good guy. But as I read this, I had to think about this, and I started to come to terms with, can I truly answer that if Jesus pointed to that one thing that I don't want to give up and said to me, Gary, do you love me more than these? I couldn't truthfully answer in every situation. And so this morning, the praise team is going to be singing. I'm going to ask them to come on out. But as they're singing, I'm going to ask that we all answer this question in ourselves. Do you love me more than these? And whether you are here that have never had a relationship with Jesus, you're like checking it out. Or whether you're here that you've made a commitment to Christ, but it's kind of like, I'm going to get the free gift of salvation, but I'm good. Or whether you're here and says, I have made that commitment to Christ, but I'm not going to give up all that stuff. Or you're here and says that, yeah, I'm striving. As a church this morning, when I laid out our plans for 2015, and I said that we're going to, as a church, I want us to make a commitment to say that we as a church, we want to be completely committed followers of Christ. That's our New Year's resolution at the church. If that's you, as the band is playing and the band is singing, to come up front and as a commitment to Christ, there's not going to be really any counselors or anything during this time. It's just you and the Lord. That if you say that, I want to be that disciple of Christ. I want to strive to live myself, to give myself a way to be used by God to be that disciple, to come forward, and we'll just all pray together. And if there are people afterwards who want to stay and want us to pray with them specifically, we'll do that. But I can tell you that I know that I need to be out front there because I want to be that completely committed follower of Christ. So I'm going to ask you to just stand with us right now, and we're going to sing this song. This song says, I give myself away so you can use me. If that's you, I'm going to ask you to just join me up front as we give our lives to Christ afresh and new for the first time, whatever it is, to give yourself away.